another pickup choir next week, and then choir rehearsal starts the Thursday after Labor Day at 7 o'clock. Everybody's welcome. If you love to sing, the choir is a hilarious, great group of people to hang out with, so you should join them. I always hear them laughing. Laughing and singing. They have good souls. Good for your soul. This is another sermon inspired by your requests. I asked, what should I preach about? And one of you said, you know, middle school kids get classes in conversation skills. Maybe adults need them too. Conversation skills for grown-ups. And a lot of people like that post over and over again. Yes, that. So I thought, okay, we'll do that. Really, is there anything better than a good conversation? A long meandering back and forth with insights and laughter and honesty and tears maybe and ahas. A conversation where you grow and connect, where you discover. There's an old joke. When you get to St. Peter's Gate, there's two signs. One says heaven, and the vast majority of folks are following that arrow. The other says discussion about heaven. Smaller crowd going that way, mostly Unitarians. Do we love conversation because we are Unitarian Universalists, or are we Unitarian Universalists because we are the kind of people who love conversation? Probably both. What I do know is that a real, deep conversation is holy. Henry Nelson Wyman, a Unitarian theologian of the last century, wrote that God was creative interchange. The process of encounter and growth and change, and that conversation that reached that depth or that height was the holy at work. I believe that. If heaven is a never-ending conversation about things that matter with good food and drink to go along, I know I will be satisfied. I mean, really, if I have one night a week like that, I would be thrilled. Even one every few weeks would be pretty great. How many of you have ever had a conversation that felt like joy embodied? Raise your hand. Yeah. Good conversation is holy. And joy. But it's not that simple, is it? Because we know that conversation sometimes is hard. And when we talk about hard things, conversation can be dangerous. It can be wounding. It can be traumatic. We can say things to each other that really hurt. Inadvertently or on purpose, conversation can damage our soul and eat away at our confidence and exclude us or others from love and community. Conversation can lead to violence, can hurt a lot. How many of you have had a conversation that still to this day hurts when you think about it? Yeah, me too. It's hard sometimes. But of course, those are just the extremes. There's also the conversation that doesn't seem to go anywhere. When you only talk about trivial things, the weather, but not climate change. The sports ball, but not concussions. Fashion, but not values. What's on TV, but not what's on your heart. Sometimes these shallow conversations are for the best. In an airplane, in a taxi, in the hairdresser's chair, or the dentist's office. Maybe it's okay to talk about the weather and just that. But with friends, you want more. In a significant relationship, you want a lot more. You want creative interchange and mutual discovery and energy, right? Deep, real conversation is necessary for joy, for our personal and intimate lives, for the spiritual life, and also to build the civic world and rescue our democracy. Doesn't it feel like we are talking past each other? Like, we can't talk about things that matter at any depth. We're always drawing up sides and never finding solutions or growing in our understanding. We have to do better than this. So how do we have more deep and joyful conversations and less conversations that are wounding and less conversations that are trivial when appropriate? I don't know all the answers to those questions, but I love good conversations and I despise bad ones. So I have some thoughts. First, I think the best conversation starts with curiosity. Curiosity. A desire to learn and go deeper. Drew Farrar says, I want the places in which we meet to be encased by aspirations and forward loving, not by affirmations and self-applause. Religiously, he's pointing us to a community that doesn't seek or assume like-mindedness, a community that is instead curious, doesn't already know, but wants to discover, to grow, that we might have more abundant life. One of my favorite metaphors for our faith is the 100-sided polygon. Truth here, this is the whole, that's a circle, a complete circle, and we're never going to get there. You can add as many sides to a polygon as you want, it's never going to be a circle, but the more sides you add to the polygon, the closer it gets to a circle. The sides are understandings and perspectives and stories and rituals and ways of being in the world. So adding more sides to the polygon requires us to ask questions and to learn more than we already know, to not think we already do know everything. Now, this just isn't about faith, is it? Nothing kills a conversation faster than I know how you feel. I hate that. No, you don't know how I feel. You've assumed you know how I feel, but you haven't really listened. Maybe instead you might say something like, I have experienced something similar but different. Maybe you could say that. Even better is, tell me more about that. It's always a good phrase. Genuine curiosity, wanting to learn. Empathy is key here, and empathy is, I think, the most essential quality that we need. Empathy plus curiosity means we treat the other person as a subject, not an object. As a person with their own motivations, their own history and ideas, we wonder, why do they think that? Instead of, how could they possibly think that? It's a big difference between those things. Curiosity is about going deeper, knowing that even in conversation about things that don't seem to matter that much, there is a hidden depth. There's more than what's on the surface. I remain convinced that people are complicated and beautiful and surprisingly deep. We just don't know how to get there very well. One group of people that usually does know how to get there, though, is poets. They're good at that. Roger, over. Say again your instructions, please. Do you read? It seems so modest. Just the facts. What's the heart rate? What's the pressure? Conversations are often just the facts on the surface, at least that's where they usually start. Why, yes, they have grown a lot. She's starting sixth grade. Yes, I've been learning a language. I just got back from a visit to my parents. I just got back from the doctor's. It's a beautiful day, isn't it? All those are just facts, modest things, but underneath each of them could be a conversation of depth and meaning. This is how history claims us, not in the gesture of one, but the conversation of many. The fireflies are condensation, our own breath, making beauty. If we could but see and listen and open our hearts with curiosity. So that's first, curiosity. Second, kindness. Good conversations are full of kindness. You listen to the other. If appropriate, you might reach out and put a hand on their arm. Not always appropriate, but sometimes you might look at them and they look at you. Kindness is physical and embodied. The hand you take across the aisle may not be one you know, but listen to its story before you let it go. Feel the other person's physical presence in the world. It's one reason that in-person is just always better than online. It just is. It's more risky, perhaps, more dangerous, not always easy to accomplish, but the opportunity for kindness is more real. Kindness and curiosity are tied together. When you really notice what's going on with another person, you should be more kind to them. That's the way it should work. The word is that Fred Rogers' favorite quotation came from the author Mary Lou Konacki, who wrote, "There isn't anyone you couldn't love once you've heard their story." There isn't anyone you couldn't love once you've heard their story. If that's not a universalist sentiment, I don't know what is. Really hearing another person is an act of kindness itself. We so often go unheard, unseen, ignored, not acknowledged. To pay attention with love is the deepest kindness of all. Interpersonally, a kind conversation acknowledges the other person's feelings. It heals hurt. It doesn't dismiss it. True kindness often requires reconciliation, the offering of a genuine apology, and extension of forgiveness. Kindness requires patience and openly acknowledging that folks have different lives. This becomes even more important when we have intercultural conversations, when we speak with people who have very different life experiences than we do. Can we exercise the gift of kindness? To be decent and generous in speaking. This means very concrete things, avoiding stereotypes, let alone insults, based on race or gender, sexuality, ability, culture, and more. When we speak in ways that only see one part of a person's identity, that is unkind. But likewise, when we speak in ways that deny parts of people's identity, that is unkind. Let me be specific. Not abstract. Kindness means using the pronoun that people use for themselves. Kindness means not participating in racist or sexist jokes. Kindness means not calling people stupid because they disagree with you. Kindness means not blundering into people's trauma and not apologizing afterward. If you want people's armor to come down and have a real connection, then you have to treat them with deep kindness. Especially when you approach wounds, social or individual, be gentle whenever possible. Life has its battles, sorrows, and regret, but let us not forget that kindness can heal us. I admit I'm not always as kind as I want to be. This is easier said than done, right? Sometimes I'm tired. Sometimes I feel threatened and fight back. Sometimes I just can't. You ever just can't? Yeah. But I'll tell you that with very few exceptions, I am always glad when I can show more kindness. And I bet you are too, right? It feels better, doesn't it? And when we are kind, others are kind too. Kindness can heal us. As we give, we gain. That's the hope. Yet there are exceptions, aren't there? There are times that kindness, even curiosity, feels too risky, that we might be a doormat for someone else, that the conversation is all one way. That's why we need the third essential ingredient of good conversation, integrity. Integrity is liberating, terrifying, necessary, and really hard. And without it, curiosity and kindness might make things pleasant, but they won't get very far. And they might get us into a lot of trouble. Integrity means telling the truth. It means sharing how you actually feel, not just going along to get along. Don't put the split pea soup in your loafers. Don't do that. Speak up. Gently, kindly, but don't lie by omission unless you really can't avoid it. You might luck out and get chocolate chip cookies instead. Happy day, that happens. You might discover the other person feels like you do, but hadn't said anything either. And, however, let's be honest, having integrity sometimes means the conversation gets really hard. Sometimes it will break a friendship, or end a marriage, or end a job. This is real, right? Sometimes when you say, that hurts me, because you have integrity and the other person says, don't be so sensitive, integrity means walking away from that conversation. Sometimes when you say, I don't think that joke is funny, you don't get invited back to the party. If you say, I will not lie for my boss, you might have to put your resume together. Saying no is hard. At least it's hard for me. It's really hard. I like to get along. And when I do say no, people are often shocked. They say, how can a minister say no? I can't do that. Whenever somebody says that, it tells me I should say no more often. Is saying no hard for you? Then I want you to practice. When integrity demands it, not on a whim, but when your integrity says, I need to say no, then say no. If saying yes is what's hard for you, then you should practice saying yes. So you gotta make a self-assessment here. I'm preaching in praise of conversation, but sometimes integrity means refusing the conversation. Let me give a political example. Some right-wing writers have taken recently to demanding debates with progressive politicians. Typically, these are young white men who demand a debate with young women of color. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, one of the young women of color, so challenged, likened it to catcalling. Hey, why don't you talk to me? Why don't you talk to me? The demand to participate in a bad faith show. She refused the conversation, rightly. We don't have to join every conversation. When we have evidence that the other party is engaged in bad faith, that they're not really willing to participate, when they don't show curiosity or kindness themselves, and especially when there's a social power difference, sometimes integrity means saying no. The writer Ijoma Olu, who I adore, often says to the trolls who she encounters online, who ask her loaded questions that start out asking like simple facts, but she knows where they're going, she says, I'm not your black Google, look it up. Yeah. The same can be said in family relationships and work ones. Sometimes integrity means saying, if you bring that subject up again, I'm hanging up. And then doing it when they do. It's hard. Sometimes integrity means handing in your resignation to the job that treats you like crap. It means refusing to participate. Or just saying, I can't do this right now. I can't, and I won't. You are allowed to protect your precious heart. You do not need to join every fight you're invited to. You don't need to be a pawn in someone else's game of let you and him fight. Integrity means a commitment to your own truth and to pay attention to your own soul, your own hunger. But it also means a commitment to a larger truth, to the goal of truth and meaning. It means that our conversations should be based in factually accurate information, at least when that is what is at stake. It means doing your homework beforehand, if possible. It means finding common ground when you can and agreeing to disagree when you can't. It means being open to changing your mind, if truth and conscience demand it. And it means holding fast when truth and conscience demand it. Conversation that's not grounded in truth, or at least the search for truth, is wasted air and wasted time. A vanity exercise. A commitment to truth, I should say, does not give you license to be disrespectful or unkind. And we should be cautious to not assume we know more than we do. But we should keep seeking, keep learning, and keep discovering the deeper truths beneath the surface. What's really going on in the transcript? We'll keep talking about good conversation this year. It's going to come up again and again. It's sort of what this is, I hope. I asked, what do you want me to talk about? You said this. Now I have. Now it's your step. Practice it, reflect on it, share your thoughts with each other and with me. My favorite definition of preaching is that it's a moment in the ongoing mutual conversation about how the Holy is moving in our lives. A moment in the conversation between us and among us. So let's keep talking. Still with kindness, curiosity, integrity, because we know what's at stake, right? And we can tell the difference between a good conversation and a bad one, right? Think of the worst conversation that you can think of. You know, like two cable news pundits shouting at each other, both on remote cameras, not even in the same room. There's no curiosity. No one's trying to learn anything. No kindness and no integrity. Stop watching cable news, by the way. Knock that off. Don't do it. Now, on the other hand, think of a great conversation. It's full of those things, right? Curiosity and kindness and integrity, listening and hearing and discovering. The bad news is that bad conversations are a vicious spiral. People stop listening. They stop being decent, they stop telling the truth, it gets worse and worse, and that's what it feels like sometimes, doesn't it? But there's good news. The good news is that good conversation is a virtuous spiral. When you experience good conversation, you want more of it. When you learn, you become more curious. When you show kindness, others are often kind back. It disarms and disorients the push for domination. When you conduct yourself with integrity, including by setting boundaries for what kind of conversations you'll be part of, you will have more good conversations and less bad ones. That's the good news. You don't have to throw up your hands in despair and say, oh, we're doomed. You can practice the art of conversation. And you can help spread the art of conversation by example in the world. And you can help every day nudge us toward that creative inner change, that real human connection, that depth of sharing that makes life beautiful, the world shareable, and the holy visible. If we will show the world compassion, then we may learn to care. If we will show acceptance, we will learn to give. If we will show commitment, we may learn to love. I pray for all of us conversations of curiosity, conversations of kindness, conversations of integrity. May we be so graced and so grace the world this day and every day. I invite you to rise, embody your spirit, break not the circle is 323 in your gray hymnal. We'll sing together. I've extinguished the chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. I invite you, if you wish, to join hands or stand near one another for our blessing benediction. Words of benediction from the Reverend Fred Gillis. May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. Enjoy your conversations. Go deeper, love larger, stand fast to truth, and go in peace. We'll sing together our closing blessing. We'll sing it through twice.